through statewide, the LIOs will be open and ready for business, and I will have to gavel out and tell them that we're reconvening, and I think that would be unfair to those who come to LIOs. So with that, what we'll do is convene at 10, and if you're not here, we'll excuse you. All right. And with that, we do have a lady who wants to testify, and I'm going to open up the hearing at this point on Senate Bill 340 so that we can have testimony, and then I'm going to open up the hearing on the next military and vets bill before we leave. With that, we have, who is Ellen?
Northup.
Thanks for coming to the committee, and thanks for being patient with us, and thanks for coming to testify on this bill.
Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today.
Ellen, state your name one more time so we have it on the recording
Ellen
machine.
Ellen Northup.
Any affiliation, Ellen?
Just two coalitions, and I represent myself otherwise. I would like to ask you folks to not pass this bill and to not allow it to go anywhere. For the last 4 years, in one form or another, I've run into this same thing, and it's driving me nuts. What happens here, it sounds just fine if you think that a person who is getting public assistance, and I'm not, by the way, of any sort, should count their PFD as a resource or as money towards their regular bills and so forth. But what in reality happens is that so many of the people who are very poor and getting some form of assistance, such as housing supplements, already have their PFDs garnished by either the government or bills that they couldn't pay. I was thinking yesterday I ran into a young woman who has a 12-year-old kid who said, I haven't gotten my PFD for 4 years because I had to have an emergency operation a few years ago. She didn't ask for emergency medical aid, and so the doctors are still taking her PFD. So she gets like 200 of her PFD. Well, she's making $8.50 an hour. She gets some housing subsidy. That's all she gets. And this would mean that she wouldn't get the housing subsidy, but she still doesn't get the PFD because of the medical bills that they're taking. So what would happen with some of our old folks especially would be like if they're getting their little housing subsidy and then the PFD comes along, that means that they have to use that for that housing instead. It also creates a heck of a lot of paperwork for people who are doing subsidized housing. I think you need to think about that too because it makes their budget go crazy. As you probably know, subsidized housing fluctuates anyway. If they get more money, then sometimes their rent goes up. And, pardon me, some of the housing people like Alaska Housing just go nuts if somebody takes a part-time job for a little while just to get some extra money to help their grandkid or their child. I know one lady who has a child out in the Tok area that's dying of cancer, and she keeps taking little jobs. She's like 80. She keeps taking little office jobs to try to send her daughter cancer money for her doctor. And every time she does that, her rent goes up, and Amy Hilliard goes crazy over the last house and trying to figure out the same rent. But please, this bill affects the poorest of the poor and the most vulnerable. And I know that everybody thinks, well, everybody takes their PFDs and goes to Disneyland. It's not necessarily so. And yes, we have some folks in my church that give their whole PFD to the church. But that's the exception. They're not the rule. And the very poor people do not have to have this. We've all generously in Alaska given the whole harmless thing for the past, since 82. And I've been here all that time. And I don't resent that little bit coming out to make sure that somebody who's really poor can have this PFD, buy their kids' school clothes, et cetera, get their glasses, pay their little bills. They count on it.
and thank you for coming to the committee and being patient with us and testifying on this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We do have a couple people online to testify, and let me tell you what I'm going to do. I got to pick this bill up on Saturday. We're certainly not going to have time to do it justice today, so we have Bruce Kavorek and Susan Sullivan online. Are you, any one of you, not able to come Saturday? All right, with that in mind, what I'm going to do is set the public testimony aside now on this one until Saturday, and I think we can dispatch the next bill rather rapidly, and I think that pretty straightforward. Tend to agree with it. House Bill 327, state employees who are called into active duty. That's, why don't you please come on forward, give us your, state your name for the record. And for those who came in on the, just a little housekeeping here, 497, I'm going to hold that over until Saturday.
Okay.
And so we will gavel in at 10 o'clock Saturday.
Chairman, I have a conflict at 10 o'clock on polling for Big Brother's week. Are you meeting Saturday afternoon as well?
No.
I'll send another body then.
Okay, I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was Margo Knut.
Thank you,
For the record. All right. Now to House Bill 327.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dave Stewart. I'm with the Division of Personnel in the Department of Administration. It's my pleasure to present House Bill 327. The legislation contemplates situations of emergency that are not contemplated by current law. If the governor, who has the authority to activate the National Guard or the Alaskan Naval Militia to active military service, state law provides for employees of the state who are activated to receive 5 days of leave, regardless of the duration of their service. They're activated under federal guidelines by the President of the United States. There is federal legislation that they return to work but doesn't protect their income or family benefits. Based on the nature of the activation, whether it's state or federal, the individual activated for military service may be covered for health insurance, but his or her dependents might not be due for extended periods of activation. This legislation allows the executive to issue an administrative order declaring an emergency and defining the nature of that emergency to the extent that state employees who are called to active service, either by the governor or by the president, can have their wages supplemented to the level of their state wage, if their military wage is less, can have their health insurance contributions continued for purposes of both their own or dependent care, and under certain circumstances might even have their retirement contributions.
One question on this one. It looks like you have a zero fiscal note on this.
Mr. Chairman, there was a note that was revised on 422.
Which I haven't seen.
It shows an indeterminate fiscal note simply because there's no way to predict who might be activated or the duration of activation. It does show an FY02 cost based on 41 employees activated on September 11th. $44,000.
This is retroactive,
yeah.
And that's why that would be an easy number to get.
Yeah.
Then prospectively, we don't know. But certainly, since you are looking back at this, you could see that in the absence of certain employees, the workload shifted, and there must have been a cost to that as well as a cost to the employee as far as reimbursement. Have you anticipated that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The average duration of activation for the current number of people, just some numbers, there are 189 state employees in the Air, the Army National Guard, and the Naval Militia. Of those 189 state employees, since September 11, 41 have been called to active
Representative Stevens has a question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask, since state employees and university employees are sometimes mixed up and sometimes not, does this include employees of the University of Alaska or not? Chairman, I think it should.
Is an amendment coming?
Well, a conceptual amendment at least.
Yes. Mr. Stewart?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Representative Stevens, the fiscal note doesn't include university employees. The bill contemplates all students.
So thank you. So the bill is, Mr. Chairman, the bill is written, and Dave does include university employees. Then.
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
The fiscal note doesn't. Interesting. Representative Fate.
Well, I'm going to take up on that and ask another question, but I'm not so sure, Representative Stevens. There's an ongoing debate as to whether the employees of the University of Alaska are state employees or are employees of the University of Alaska, which is constitutionally authorized. And I think there is a need for clarification on that. The other thing that does bother me in this bill is that it allows the health insurance benefits to continue even though those members that go in the armed forces or in the reserve usually have the same benefits. So you're paying for the benefits basically that are not needed. And I'd like a discussion on that, whether or not a conceptual amendment that if that individual that goes into the reserve, for example, is not covered by those benefits, then he shall continue the coverage by the state. But if he has coverage, the state certainly doesn't need to do that coverage until such time as he gets out of the service and go back to his old job.
Stewart?
To the chair, Representative Fate, the nature of the application, either under President's order or by executive order, most employees were activated to most persons who are less than 50. The average is just
I still have a problem with, I don't know how many people we're talking about, what the impact would be, especially on 140 days. It would be much less if it were 30 days, obviously. But I'm really not sure the impact. At a time when we're trying to save money, it's not that I'm against this, but I would really like to have a little bit more scrutiny done on the impact and the fiscal impact.
And I'm going to interrupt. I think two of the good questions come up on the university. And on maybe a time comparison of how many people are actually involved in this, maybe we better hold this over till Saturday so that we can have that discussion. Because
yep.
I think to push it through without that discussion wouldn't be wise. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hold this bill over till Saturday so that we can go ahead and adjourn. But what I'm going to do before we do that, I'm just going to let you know that not only will we take up House Bill 327 at the top, we'll go right into the 497, which is the bill on lease purchase of correctional facilities and the certificate of participation issue. And then we'll go into the infamous House Bill number 340, dealing with the treatment of permanent fund dividends and eligibility of certain benefits. And with that, we probably look like we're going to have ourselves a plenty good time Saturday.
This is cool.
For that, we'll adjourn the committee.
Let's fix some conflict.